Welcome to the FTN NBA Podcast with your hosts, Adam Pfeiffer and Joe Metz. Presented by the FTN Network, this two-man fast break runs you through the best cash and tournament options for every game on today's slate.
What is going on, everybody? Welcome back. Wednesday, January 20th, 2021. And the FTN Fantasy NBA Podcast is back, brought to you by the FTN Network. 10 games, I believe, on Wednesday night. Was going to be 11, had a postponement between the Wizards and Hornets. So, myself, Adam Pfeiffer, and Joe Metz with you to break down these 10 games. A ton of action, a ton of news, and a ton of interesting storylines here, Joe. Or what are we calling you now? Big Papa Joe, I believe?
I guess. I mean, that's all Kawhi Eisenberg, man. And I'm okay with Joe.
What about, I was going to say like Sloppy Joe, but that just sounds disrespectful.
That sounds really, that also sounds really inappropriate.
I digress, but how you been, man? How's the first couple, you've been home for what? Almost a week now or around a week?
We got home. So baby was born on the 10th. We were in the hospital for 5 days. So we got home Thursday afternoon. So it's been
almost a week.
It's been an adjustment, almost a week. But aside from the lack of sleep, which was obviously expected, it just feels nice to be in the confines of our own home compared to a hospital room.
Yeah, I bet.
And I obviously now 3 months off of work, 3 paid months off of work, while I just get to dissect NBA literally all day. So I really can't complain.
Yeah, there's a lot on this slate, and a lot of it honestly comes in this first game. So let's get right into it. Brooklyn at Cleveland. So Kyrie Irving he's not on the injury report, is expected to return. We've seen Kevin Durant and James Harden dominate the last two games. The Brooklyn Nets, who just coming off a victory against the Milwaukee Bucks. sorry.
I mean, hey, that was a hell of a
game. That was the best game of the year.
The only qualm I have is when they gave Chris Middleton the ball in the corner, he had a cutting Giannis wide open because three defenders turned their attention to him. Quick pass would have brought us to overtime, but I digress. I'm looking forward to the Eastern Conference Finals. It'll be fun.
So we talked about this we didn't pod on Tuesday because there was only two games. But the last time we did the pod, we had a potential chance of Kyrie returning. We talked about what to expect. And the question is still up in the air because the last two games, James Harden, 35% usage rate, Durant, 34.6%. So they're both just absolutely dominating the ball. Like, nobody else is even close to touching them in terms of usage. Like, I'm actually interested to see who's third on team in usage in these last two games. So they're both over 35%. You have to go all the way to the next page to find somebody. You have to go to the third page to find somebody on Brooklyn with a usage rate still haven't found anybody. Yeah, we're below 20%. Like, there's just nobody there. But now Kyrie's going to be back. When this trade was announced, my assumption was that James Harden was going to play on the ball more than Kyrie when they were on the floor. So I expect Kyrie to play more of like a two-guard role in this offense. Yeah. And then on the other side of this game, Jared Allen is going to make his Cleveland debut. So he gets an immediate revenge game. Torian Prince is going to play. And then both Cleveland guards have a shot to return, Darius Garland and Colin Sexton. So let's say Sexton and Garland play, and that means everybody that's hurt except for the minor pieces, or except for Kevin Love, and then the minor pieces like Dellavedova, I believe is actually questionable. No, he's already been ruled out. Like, I don't know who to play from this game because Drummond's 10K and a great matchup, don't get me wrong, but Cleveland's going to be huge dogs in this game. They'll probably get blown out, plus Jared Allen's there now. Then you have the guards, so I don't feel great about either one particularly. Even if they're out, like Chetty at 6'5", not really the spot for me to go to him. Nance at 6'4", like, Jared Allen at 6'6". I don't know how you feel confident playing because I don't see them playing him and Drummond together very often this game, especially with Durant playing the power forward for Brooklyn. Like, and then where do you go with them? Like, if I'm playing anybody from this game, it's just playing Durant and Kyrie and Harden in some lineups because they're really good at basketball. But it's messy.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, the fully healthy Cavs team just kind of returns the Cavs team to the form where it's never really a team you target unless they're in a matchup with a team like the Hawks or per se. If there is a single Cav player that I like, I actually don't mind Darius Garland at his price. He has been out for a while with that shoulder injury, so I would monitor the news leading up to lock to see, you know, if there is going to be some type of limitation. But if there's not, I mean, he was playing really, really well before the injury. He was averaging over 30 fantasy points per game. At his $5,600 price, like, sure, his usage rate isn't amazing. It's a shade under 22% on the year, but flirts with a fantasy point per minute. You can't really argue with that. But his return, you know, Colin Sexton's return, that really takes away the value of Damian Dotson at 5,200. Jeddy Osman, he's going to lose all of that, the assist peripherals. Like, and then there's the bigs who there's all of a sudden a massive logjam in the front court. And, you know, Brooklyn's a team that we've seen through their first two games after the trade have gotten absolutely decimated at the rim. But because of this carousel of big men that I forecast, like, I don't feel confident on a 10-game slate targeting any of them. And then you look at the other side of the game. I love the prices on James Harden and Kevin Durant, both under 10K. But, you know, Adam, you pose a question, like, what is the return of Kyrie going to do? They're already at the usage rates are funneled between the two top players right now. Like, besides the 34 and 35% up top for Durant and Harden, no player is above 17%. That's only going to get worse with Kyrie involved. I still expect both Harden and Durant to probably sit at least 30%. Maybe I could see, I hypothetically see, you know, Harden sliding down to about 32%. Durant around 30, Kyrie around 28. That's my guess.
This is what I think it's going to look like, but there's a caveat and there's a problem. I think the usage and like just distribution and everything between Harden and Kyrie, not in terms of exactly the amount of touches and usage rate, but just the involvement is going to be similar to Portland with Lillard and McCollum when they're both healthy. But the caveat
like
is
last year, like this, last year when they were healthy,
right?
Because this year they were both phenomenal.
The caveat is, there's the second or third best player in basketball that's also on this Brooklyn team who's playing at an elite level right now, and he's going to demand a ton of work. So I personally would be more inclined to just play Harden or Durant than Kyrie at 9K, which is a fine price for him, but I just think after his start with Brooklyn that Harden's going to still have the ball in his hands more. And then it's like DeAndre Jordan's up to 5,500, which isn't a bad price for him. But I don't know if he's playing 38 minutes again, especially in this game. I understand that they're missing players on their front court. Joe Harris at 5,500, like, he's going to have to hit, you know, half of his eight shots or walk
and
in a rebound.
The thing is, even if he hits half of his eight shots, like, I don't think at his price that's not enough to get you there. Yeah. Like, he really needs to get 8, 9, 10 open threes and have a super efficient game, like a hyper efficient game. And then fall into some peripherals. I just, until his price in this offense kind of falls down to back to that like 4.6, 4.7 range, I don't think I can go there.
Yeah, and for Cleveland, I love the matchup and the spot for Drummond. I just don't think I can pay 10K for him when, I mean, he's played 33 minutes on the year alongside JaVale McGee. So I don't think he's going to be playing alongside Jared Allen. McGee's been getting, you know, 17 to 20 minutes each game usually. So Drummond could come back down to like 32, 33 minutes, whereas he's been playing a lot of like towards 37, 38, and his usage has been massive. So this game is going to be really interesting to see how these two teams operate with their new players that they added. Anything else? Like, I do agree. I think Garland would be the preferred option if I'm picking anybody from Cleveland. He was above the 6K range before he got hurt. He was facilitating a lot for this team. And now you add, you know, Jared Allen and Andre Drummond in the pick and roll. Like, he could get plenty of assists in this game. I do
it just
agree.
Seems
he'd
like,
be the
it
guy.
Just seems like a wait and see approach for this entire game. I do expect some ownership to be on Brooklyn, but that's with 9 other games on the slate. I'll take my chances elsewhere.
All right, let's. I think we can move on. It's just
too ambiguous of a city. Like, we have no idea what to expect out of this offense. I mean, they're going to play really well, but we just don't know how it's going to translate to fantasy production.
Right. All right, let's move on to Dallas at the Indiana Pacers. total for this game sitting at around 217. Pacers 1-point favorites. Luka Doncic coming off his worst game of the year, which just shows how good Luka is, because he almost triple-doubled. He had 15, 7, and 9, but only shot 4 of 11, only 11 shot attempts for Luka in that game against Toronto. Back down below 10-7. This is interesting because 10-7 for Luka, I'll play against anybody. The matchup itself isn't great. You look at the Pacers this year, they're top 10 in six of Luka's 8 archetypes per our advanced DVP, which includes superstars, which they're second against. And a lot of that has to do with Miles Turner, who's been probably the defensive player of the year this year. He's averaging over 4 blocks per game, but he's questionable. He missed over the weekend's game with a hand injury. If he sits, Luka propels much higher for me, because not only is Miles Turner that good of a defender, but teams are only shooting 40% on defended field goals against him this year. It's a really low rate. And Luka's averaging 25 drives per game, the most in the NBA. So I think this really would help Luka, would obviously help Porzingis too. What do we think of Dallas, who, by the way, will remain without Josh Richardson, Dorian Finney-Smith, and I believe Tim Hardaway Jr. is on the injury report, but he's probable.
Correct. I'm in the same boat with Luka. I think he'll have some ownership, especially at this price. I think we take the last game with a grain of salt, but I will really only go out of my way to get him if Miles Turner sits. On the other hand, I'm actually really, really high on Kristaps Porzingis, regardless of Turner's status. You know, he's 7,900, which is a phenomenal price. And his minutes, like, he's played 32-plus minutes in the last two games, and he hasn't rested yet. Like, I think we're at the point now where we can confidently project him for 32-plus minutes. And at that price, at 7,900, like, he's been absolutely chucking when he's in the game since he came back.
Ridiculous.
Like, chucking. And last game was the first game he shot above 50% from the field. So he's still rounding into form. Rebounds are going to be there, and even more so if Turner's out. So I think this price is really, really reasonable with a lot of room for upside. And I do not expect him to be popular either. So he's dollar for dollar, he is my favorite option on Dallas. And it feels weird saying that with Luka at 10-7.
I love Porzingis here. Have had interest in him since his first game back. After that one, price is back below 8K. Like you said, he's just taking so many shots. He is spotting up and posting up a good bit. He's currently has a 26% frequency rate off spot ups, 5.5 spot up points per game, which puts him, you know, inside the top 15 or so in the NBA. The Pacers this year, they have not been a good spot up defense. Most points per possession to spot up shooters at 1.2. Third most points per game to spot-up shooters at just over 34, and the third highest field goal percentage of spot-up shooters at 44.1%. If Turner's out, even better, but if Turner's in, like, Turner's a great rim protector, but, like, will he be able to get out and on the perimeter against Porzingis to cover threes? That still remains to be seen. So, yeah, I really, really like Porzingis in this spot. The problem I have is, like, a lot of the times I like to play Luka and Porzingis together, but like this game doesn't have the greatest total. Like, I'm not saying you can't do it, because I do like some pieces on the other side, but not exactly the two of the fastest teams in basketball.
Yeah.
But you know, with Richardson out, with Dorian Finney-Smith out, like they're just going to dominate the usage like they always do anyway. So
I'm curious to see what they roll out for starters, because they started Jalen Brunson at the 2 last game. So I'm curious if they do that again. Correct. Hardaway played last game, right?
I believe he did.
Okay.
Yeah, he came back recently, but groin still, like, bothered him. He went 0 for 12 last game.
Yeah, no thanks. Regardless of who they start, like, it's really hard for me to have any interest, especially given the matchup outside of those two. I don't hate James Johnson as long as Dorian Finney-Smith and Maxi Kleber are out.
And they are.
Yeah, and he's been in that, you know, 25-ish minute range. He's been a fine per minute producer, but, you know, at 4,500, it's not a price I'm like gawking over, and it's not a price I necessarily love and think he's going to get you there with. I don't think even if Brunson plays, I would go there on a full slate at 4,300. His ownership was in cash game, a few cash games I was in, like the $50 double ups, his ownership was like 60-70%. Like, I was shocked how many people flocked to him. Not sure it'll be the same, because it was a pretty mediocre outing, but I just don't think there's a need to go to these ancillary pieces. I'd much rather look to fill my lineup with like the players on the other side of this game.
Yeah, let's talk about it. I mean, obviously, Malcolm Brogdon and Domantas Sabonis doing all the heavy lifting here. Miles Turner, like we said, questionable. Jeremy Lamb's also questionable. Hasn't played yet this year. He would most certainly be limited. Guy coming off a pretty bad knee injury. Has not played all year. So, no thank you for him, obviously. I don't think it'll hurt too much. But, like, you have Justin Holiday at under 5K. He's obviously stepped in with no Oladipo, and TJ Warren's still out. And they're not, you know, going to have Caris LeVert, who, by the way, like, thank God it sounds
poor,
like he's going to be okay.
I feel so bad, man.
It sounds like he's going to be all right, though. But, yeah, like, that's...
So, sidebar here, with them finding the mass, was it liver, kidney? How, like, was that found on the physical that the Pacers did? Or was that... outside, because typically wouldn't that constitute as a failed physical? And
no,
then
so I think it was just an MRI that he had after the physical.
See, that's interesting to me, because like typically, and this is again, sorry to go on a tangent, but like usually don't get an MRI, or you're not referred to get an MRI without like reason for concern. So was this not brought up to the Pacers prior to the trade? Like it opens up a can of worms here, but obviously not relevant to the podcast. And I really like Caris LeVert is one of my favorite players to watch, and I really hope he's okay, because I think he could flourish with Sabonis and Brogdon. So hopefully it's benign at best.
Yeah, I think the trade might have saved my life. So scary.
Well, that's good.
But
yeah,
definitely hoping he's all right. But, you know, Sabonis I like a lot here. Same with Brogdon. Sabonis, 9,800. Dallas has been really bad at defending, you know, centers and power forwards out of the pick and roll. They actually allow the most points per game to the roll man at 10.5 per game. So I love Sabonis here.
Yeah, they're also getting killed at the basket. Like within 5 and 5 and 9 feet, they're like bottom 10 in the league in points allowed.
Yep, they allow the second highest field goal percentage at the rim. Actually first, just over 70%. Now Porzingis being back will help out with that, obviously, because for much of the season it was Kleber and Cauley-Stein and, you know, and Dwight Powell, but like still Sabonis is so involved, among the second in touches per game, top 10 in rebounding opportunities per game, just dominating right now with no Oladipo, no TJ Warren, and potentially no Miles Turner. And, you know, these two correlate well. I mean, Brogdon has such a high floor. I mean, it's not a great matchup for point guards and guards. Dallas has actually defended them pretty well this year, but like they're obviously the two key cogs. What do we do if Turner's out again? Does that make us a little bit like they don't have? It's not like they have a center that they would just play and be like, okay, yeah. Like they don't have like a JaVale McGee or a DeAndre Jordan when Jared Allen was in Brooklyn. Like they don't have like that just. Really stable.
They just have like a ton.
Yeah,
like,
they have Goga Bitadze. Like it's just
Goga, Domantas Sabonis, McDermott will slide into the four. But you look at their last game without Turner. It was kind of an odd rotation. Four players saw over 30 minutes. Obviously, Sabonis and Brogdon. Doug McDermott saw 32. Justin Holiday saw 35. Aside from them, like T.J. McConnell saw 26. Ed Sumner saw 21. But like Goga
started.
Goga only saw 15. So it seems like they shift Sabonis to the five a lot more, run a bit smaller with McBuckets at the four. If that's what we're expecting again, I don't hate him at 47, but because of the lack of peripherals he comes with, like he's going to have a hyper efficient game. Like he shot 9 of 12 last game. He's going to have to do that again to get you there, and I don't know if...
He just played a ton of minutes at power forward, had one rebound. Like, if Turner's out, Sabonis has,
like,
18 rebounding ceiling.
Yeah, like, I mean, Sabonis literally had 14 board. He had 19 and 14 when playing a good chunk of the five. I don't know if Turner's absence would put me on any of the indie pieces more. I think it would just strengthen the Dallas pieces on the other side of the ball.
Okay. Anything else from this one?
No.
All right, let's go to Boston and Philadelphia, where, Joe, we got to talk about Kemba Walker for the first time this year. Made his season debut the other day against New York, played 20 minutes, just over 22 fantasy points.
He shot horribly and still got about 22, 23 fantasy points. So
right. He took a hit to the ribs, but he's fine. He's good to go. He's probably still going to be limited to, you know, I would say 25 minutes is his ceiling in this game. At 6,500, like, it's a huge slate. I don't know if you have to go there. And then Jason Tatum's still going to be out for Boston. So, you know, Kemba's going to be a much higher usage player than Marcus Smart Peyton Pritchard or whoever else was playing point guard minutes, Jeff Teague. Then, but, like, Jaylen Brown is still doing a lot of the heavy lifting here, too. He is just taking so many shots. 8,700. Matchup isn't great against Philadelphia. They've been one of the best defensive teams in basketball, but... I'll start with Boston. What do you think about them here?
Boston on the 10-game slate, I like a lot of these players individually, but in this matchup, I just don't know if I'm going to get to any Celtics aside from maybe a sprinkle of Jaylen Brown. If multi-entering, like Jaylen Brown's $8,700 price is definitely reasonable. I mean, he's going to shoot 20-plus times with Tatum out. But again, at $8,700, he's going to need at least like close to a 50 fantasy point game to make you like really satisfied. So again, in this matchup, the potential is there. It's definitely in the range of outcomes. I just don't know how confident I am in that. I would expect Brown to see a lot of Ben Simmons tomorrow, or do you think that's accurate?
I mean,
or do you think they stick Ben Simmons on Kemba? But I can, like, if they start Shake Milton, which they've done here and there this season, and Seth, I mean, I guess Seth Curry's back. So yeah, like, Curry's Shake back. Out.
I think Brown's going to see him regardless because I don't think Kemba's going to play more than like 23 to 25 minutes.
And that is just more reason to, I don't want to say fade Jaylen Brown because I'm not like, he's a very strong play, but it's another reason for concern. Even with Tatum out, I don't think I'm going to get here on this slate. I don't mind. Like it's,
I want to say bad play, but for you, it's not a cool play. That's kind of how I feel too.
Yeah, exactly. And I want to say 25 minutes of Kemba without Tatum at 6,500 could be a decent GPP spot, like to get really different. And I think it could, but there is just so much inherent risk there where it's, I don't know if it's even worth it.
Yeah. Then with Tatum out, like Grant Williams and Semi Ojeleye have been playing 23 to 25 minutes, but they've had no usage and have done nothing. So I don't even care at their prices about playing them. The, you know, Daniel Tyson and Tristan Thompson are both playing right around 20 to 26 minutes. They have to go against Embiid. One of them is going to probably pick up fouls. I'm good on that. Let's go to the Sixers. They are healthy. I mean, they started to get everybody back the last couple of days, and now Seth Curry's back. So probably see them go back to that same starting five of Simmons, Curry. Danny Green, thank you. I forgot he was on the team. Danny Green, Tobias Harris, and Joel Embiid. Embiid's under 10K again. He's been incredible this year. I mean, I know he was bad in the last game against Miami.
And Boston's not a front court to be scared of anymore. So
They never were.
Again, like this is – that's true. I think it was a little more intimidating when Al Horford was there. But again, like we've preached this just about every podcast that he's been active, like, anytime Joel Embiid is under 10K, like he is 100% worth consideration.
Yeah, like, I like he literally a lot.
Like look what he did against Miami, 39 minutes, hit 82.5 fantasy points. Like that is his ceiling.
Yeah, then the last game against Miami, he only played 24 minutes. They didn't need him in that game really. I like him quite a bit. Tobias at 72 is getting a little bit more interesting. He hasn't had the ceiling games again as much as he was earlier in the year. He's pretty much a lock to get you like 32 to 35 at least, but I don't know if this is the spot in tournaments where he just pops off. Same with Ben Simmons, who is averaging almost a triple double, but at 9,100, like I think he'll get you 45 or so. He has one game of 50 this year. That's it. Like I just always struggle with Ben Simmons.
I just wish his triple doubles weren't like 14, 11, and 10.
Right, and that 14, sounds 14, that sounds so like.
It sounds really petty and like
right. But when you're comparing him to players who
like a Luka's triple double who's like 35, 16, and 15, like
well, not even just that, but it's like players around Ben Simmons at the position, D'Angelo Russell D'Angelo Russell, you could make it like if you saw in the box where D'Angelo Russell had 40 real points, you wouldn't be surprised, especially without Kat. De'Aaron Fox, more upside and scoring everything. Like it's just when you're not when I still can't believe Ben Simmons took two shots in a game in 32 minutes or not too long ago. It's just
but, like you see, you look around his price range and sure he has triple double upside, but like raw upside, I would argue that like D'Lo. I would argue Brogdon has more raw upside this year than him for $800 less. D'Lo, De'Aaron Fox, Kyrie remains to be seen because we're avoiding that situation. Trae Young, stat, like literally everyone around him, like those six players, I would rather trust their upside than Ben Simmons on this slate.
Very fair. Shake Milton's coming off a huge game, but that was with Embiid out, Curry still out. Curry's going to be back, so I would expect Milton to be their sixth man once again. Curry at 5,300, like he's kind of one of those perfect filler plays. Hopefully his conditioning's fine, but if he's good to go, should get 33, 34 minutes in a close game, which I expect this to be fairly close even without Tatum. I don't hate him either. Anything else from Philadelphia?
No.
All right, let's go to Detroit at Atlanta, where the highest-priced small forward on the slate is one Kevin Huerter. I don't know what DraftKings did. As of this recording, at around 10 o'clock on Wednesday or Tuesday night, Kevin Huerter is 9,500 on DraftKings.
It has to be the 41 minutes last game. Or DraftKings knows something that we don't.
I mean,
whether it's
Trae Young is probable, but to bump him up $4,000, a little interesting.
So hypothetically say, I mean, I'm sure there is an adjustment made throughout the day. Hypothetically say they don't adjust his price. If in the milli on or the 100 grand on DraftKings, what do you think his ownership will be? It's not going to be zero.
Huerter?
Yeah, it's not going to be zero.
1.8. I don't know.
That is way too high. Like, I mean, I'd say it's going to be around 2%, which is really sad. But, I mean,
Let's just not even talk about it. Unless his price gets fixed, you're not playing Kevin Huerter.
I would say if Kevin Huerter, if Cam Reddish is out, he's currently listed as questionable, Kevin Huerter would be viable anywhere below 6K if they change his price.
Yeah, and you brought up a good point. Maybe when they were putting the prices in, they were originally trying to put 5,900. And if that's the case,
I'd be fine with Kevin
Huerter. He's a really fine play. Which, I mean, he was trending up that way, 5,700, then he had a 45-point game. It had to have been 5,900, which what the price was supposed to be. But, yeah, I mean, Cam Reddish is questionable, Bogdanovich out, Gallinari out, Hunter's probable, Trae Young's probable. Trae Young, back-to-back 50-point fantasy games, not shooting the ball incredibly well. Only took 8 shots. Dude, Trae Young's gotten to the free throw line 25 times the last 2 games. Thoughts on him at 9,300? I think he's perfectly fine.
No, I like him a lot. And I like him more because look at his peripherals in the last, I'd say, 4 games. Rebounds have really come around in the last 2 where he's at 15 over that span. But like last year, he wasn't like a massive assist guy. But even past his last 4 games, he's had 13, 11, 7, 8, 10, 3, and then 14, 10, 7, 11. Like he is facilitating a lot more this season. I think it has to do with the fact that they do have more options. Even just the addition of Clint Capella has been huge, especially over these last 2 games. I like Trae Young a lot. I don't know if I'd go – I mean, I'd go Trae Young over Ben Simmons, but I don't know if I'd go Trae Young over some of, like Steph Curry for a few hundred dollars more. I would probably go him over De'Aaron Fox. Don't know if I'd go him over Malcolm Brogdon. But there is merit to Trae Young. My favorite Hawk on this slate, though, I mean – you can argue Clint Capella at 7,600, but I love DeAndre Hunter. He's really impressed me just from a fan standpoint this season. I think he's been one of the best sophomores, but his minutes are super stable, especially with Reddish not playing the last 2 games. He's averaged over 36 a game, and he's really come around from the field. Like, he's going to shoot 10-plus times. He's going to get some boards. He'll get you some stocks. Like, I think 6,200 is a really reasonable price. And we've seen at that price, he has 6-7x upside.
I like Hunter, too. 6.5 spot-up points per game puts him top 7 in the league. Detroit, third most points per possession of spot-up shooters this season. Fifth most points per game off the play type. Second highest field goal percentage at 44.8%. He's easily my second favorite option behind Trae Young. I've been playing Clint Capella pretty much almost every slate lately. He's been awesome. It's a perfect fit with Trae Young because it's kind of the same play style as when he was playing with James Harden. And you can make the case Trae Young.
You just have to be near the rim. That's literally all you have to do with Trae on your team.
Like, I just don't see any reason why people should keep, like, even at this price difference, it's $700. I'd still rather play Clint Capella over John Collins because we know Collins' rebounds have come down to a modest level, but he's not getting double digit rebounds very often.
He's been much more volatile than Clint Capella too.
Right.
I mean, Clint Capella was fairly popular last night at 7,500. I expect the same, seeing that his price only went up $100. John Collins is it's like you look at his price and it's like, wow, this is a bargain. But is it really? Like at his price, like take his, last five games, he's only at this current price eclipsed 5X once. So I don't think I can get to John Collins even in this game. I would almost like, ooh, this is gonna be a hot take. But like and even in tournaments, part of me would rather roster Blake Griffin for
I
less.
don't.
For
I
seven
honestly
eight hundred
don't
dollars
think
less.
that's that hot of a take. They're both providing like the same type of fantasy production,
Yeah.
and there's probably a better path to more usage for Blake.
It's also a better, I mean, they're both great matchups, but like you can't argue with Atlanta, which is another reason just to love Jeremy Grant. If we don't love Jeremy Grant enough on this podcast,
Yeah, I like.
$7,700 is too cheap.
I like him a lot here. Fast-paced games suits well, suits Jeremy Grant well for blocks and steals. Been
Look at
facilitating
his
more.
field goal attempts over the last, like, look at how many shots this man has
He's
taken.
taken 19 in four straight games.
Well, even, okay, then he has 15, but then 20, 25, 24, 20, like, he's doing, like, this is why he came to Detroit. Like, he is literally just wants to be able to do whatever he wants, and Dwayne Casey has given him the reins. So I, until his price rises another $1,000 at this rate, I'm gonna roster him every slate.
His usage rate last year with Denver was around 18%. This year with Detroit, it's at 26%. He's getting a lot of isolation possessions as well. Yeah, I like this price, and especially like if you're playing Trae Young and Capella together, or you're playing Trae and Hunter, like run it back with Grant. And like you said, I don't even think Blake Griffin's an awful play at 6,100. Like the rebounds have come way down. He's just there's a lot of games where he's just not interested. He's just taking threes just to take them. But he should give you like a decent floor in cash at that
Yeah,
price
I think I'd
tag.
still rather go, position aside, I think I'd rather go DeAndre Hunter for $100 more.
I
But
think
I
I
don't
would
hate
too.
Blake.
Any Derrick Rose at 5,400, great matchup. He's still coming off the bench, but in competitive games, like last game you played 27 minutes. If Derrick Rose plays 27 minutes at 5,400, given the usage he's seeing, that could be worth it, and this is obviously a really good matchup.
Yeah. I don't hate, I mean, the usage is going to be there. I don't hate it. My 5,400 is really, really cheap. Like, he really only, he's shown that he only needs about 20 minutes to get there. I don't know if I go here in cash, but I definitely see the tournament appeal.
He does still lead the team in usage rate, by the way, 29.6%, 21% assist rate leads the team, and 1.18 fantasy points per minute also leads the team. So I actually think Derrick Rose is a solid play here. We know they're going to be without Killian Hayes for a while as well. Anyone else from Detroit?
No.
All right. Miami at Toronto. The Heat still missing some guys. Jimmy Butler out. Tyler Hero questionable. He's missed the last couple games with that neck injury. Goran Dragic is probable. So is Gabe Vincent, who's been probable the last couple games and has played in all of them. Avery Bradley still out. Let's start with Miami. I mean, if Hero's out, do we just continue to play Bam at 8,600? Obviously, Dragic and Gabe Vincent continue to see more usage. Dragic taking an obvious larger role with Hero and Butler out. 5,700 is viable for him. I mentioned how Toronto's defense is taking a little bit of a step back this year.
Yeah, I Hero's out. I mean, I have a hard time not going Bam. He does literally everything. We don't have to obsess over him more than we already do, but look at the last two games without Tyler Hero. He's at 50 plus in both. I do like Dragic a lot. Especially, I assume he's gonna play. He's on track to play, and the minutes are trending in the right direction. He's been a little volatile this season. But I don't think at 5,700, it's a risk that I don't want to stomach. Kendrick Nunn is also really interesting. He's seen 27 and 34 minutes in those two games without Hero. His price is still only $4,000, and you and I both know that the offensive upside that he does come with. I wouldn't mind getting some Kendrick Nunn exposure, especially with that dual position eligibility. But Tyler Hero would 100% have to be out for me to go there.
Yeah, if Hero's out, I like him a lot. Like, and there was the one game Miami played where I think it was the game he played, what, 27 minutes?
That
He,
was two games against Detroit. The
yeah, that
first
was
game
the
was Detroit, yeah.
blowout. And he didn't play really the fourth quarter, which was encouraging to me. And then 34 minutes last game, he would be a really strong value play if Hero's out, which very well could happen. With Butler and Hero off the floor this season, Dragic has a 29% usage rate. Nunn's around 24%. So at that price, it would definitely take it.
And Toronto is not a defense to be that scared of anymore. They have really not played well this year.
Well, that's because Chris Boucher doesn't play 38 minutes a night. Otherwise,
that's also true. That is also true. He'll be there within the next couple of weeks. He has to.
He, by the way, is probably still too cheap at 7,300.
He's way too. If he's not 8,300 might be too cheap.
I mean, he's ridiculous. Still not starting.
Not be cheaper. He should not be cheaper than Pascal Siakam.
I love Pascal, but I don't see how you can disagree.
Like, I mean, and the thing, I play them. I had 100% Chris Boucher exposure in my three lineups. On the 18th against Dallas, and I didn't see him above 16% in a single tournament, which I think it was a 4-game slate. Like, that is way too low.
He has at least 2 blocks in 7 of his last 10 games, which I guess would be, no, he's played 13 games, so 7 of his last 10 games.
He's also shooting a ton of threes. Not, I shouldn't say a ton, but he's shooting at least probably 3-4 games.
I mean, he's taken at least 4 in each of his last 4. So, like, especially on DraftKings where we're talking about him being too cheap, you're getting shot blocking upside and you're getting 3-point upside. He's obviously getting enough rebounds and he's taking plenty of shots. He scored at least 20 real points in 4 straight games. Like, he should be at worst like 7,800, and he's not. So I still have interest. We know he's probably not going to start, but we know he's probably going to start the second half and smash. The problem I've had with Toronto is, like, Lowry and Van Vliet and Siakam are all fine, but, like, I would rather play the guards in this game because they're cheaper, and you know, like, Siakam will too, but you know these guys are going to play 35 minutes in any competitive game. Other than that, though, like, OG, another guy who's going to play huge minutes, but 5,900, like, he has a decent floor.
He definitely has upside, too, so I'm fine with that. I would rather go him over Kevin Herter if he's 5,900.
Yeah, I mean, if Reddish is out, I'd rather play Herter, I think.
Oh, yeah, very, very true. But, I mean, last year is Eric Gordon if you want 30 fantasy points. This year it's OG right now.
Yeah.
I think he's a phenomenal option. If you're looking for that last piece in cash, he's a rock solid option.
All right. Simple enough. Let's go on to Orlando and Minnesota. Karl Anthony Towns, obviously still going to be out as he tested positive for COVID. We could see the Timberwolves continue to just dominate usage for D'Angelo Russell, who's coming off a huge game against Atlanta. 51 fantasy points, took 22 shots. He's 8,800 against Orlando, a team that, you know, plays relatively slow. Their defense hasn't been nearly as good this year. Thoughts on Minnesota here?
I like D'Angelo Russell. I think $8,800 is a fine price for him. I don't know if I'd go here over Malcolm Brogdon for a few hundred dollars cheaper. And if position aside, I think I'd rather play Boucher. I'd rather play Jeremy Grant. But there is, you know, you mentioned it when we were talking about Ben Simmons. Like, he has 40 raw point upside. And I don't know what was going on with him earlier in the season where he looked like he just didn't care to play. He's really turned that around. I mean, he's had 40-plus drafting points in 3 straight games. He's had a few 50-point outings over his last handful. Minutes are there, shots are there. I have no problem with it at all. Outside of D'Angelo Russell, I think I have a hard time not looking at Vanderbilt for 4,900. He got the start last game. Field goals aren't going to be I shouldn't just say field goals. Usage is not going to be like his wheelhouse, and we know this. But like, he's going to load up on peripherals, especially if he starts. I think he's a little too cheap. Even against Orlando, Naz Reid is fine too at 4,800. He drew the start last game as well and played 28 minutes. A little disappointing, but we've seen both last year and this year, he's got 35 fantasy point upside. Like, I'm totally fine going there for 4,800 as long as Wancho and Karl-Anthony Towns continue to remain out. So I don't mind those guys. Malik Beasley's fine at 6,900. I just think he's a player that on 10 games, like, kind of gets lost in the shuffle, if that makes sense. But I have more interest in a few Orlando pieces than I do these ancillary Minnesota pieces. What about you?
Yeah, I mean, Russell had a 34.5% usage rate in that last game. I mean, Anthony Edwards, I was wondering what he would be like with Rubio also out. He played 30 minutes, which is definitely encouraging. He's 4,500. He had a, what was his usage rate? His usage rate was 23%, so not as high as I would have liked, but I don't think he's a terrible, mid-tier value play with Rubio still out at 4,500. And then, yeah, I would prefer Vanderbilt over Nasri. I don't think either are a must or anything like that, though. Like, Russell's
No, I
obviously
don't either.
the main option
It's
here.
just though it's just they're typically they're perfect for that role where like, hey, you have 5 grand left for your utility. They're both viable in that situation.
On the other side, I think Vucevic, you can make the case, is the best center on the slate. I don't get why he's only 8,600.
That's ridiculous.
Right, like
I mean, if you look at this slate,
he's
like
coming
we've
off a
already talked.
48 fantasy point game, which is like right in his wheelhouse where he always gets you.
69 before that.
Right, and he gets bumped down like $1,100 almost, and he's get against a bottom three defense in the NBA.
It just doesn't make sense. And I mean, I think they could end up winning by, 12 or 14, but they're not going to run away with this game in the first
Maybe they
half
took Vucevic, parts of Vucevic's salary and
and
put it
give it
on
to
Kevin
Kevin Herter.
Herter. Like, they might have done that. But
They
yeah,
may
I
have.
think he might actually be the best center on the slate.
I think, I 100% agree. And like looking at where we've gone with the slate so far, we haven't really talked about a stud above 10K that we really, really like need to get in our lineup. Like I get Luka, I get the appeal, a couple of the Brooklyn guys, but like even just the last two, three games we talked about, you can start your lineup with Vucevic at center, Boucher at power forward, Jeremy Grant at your forward spot, and go with balance from there. And that saves you salary and provides a ton of upside. Like they all have 60 fantasy point upside. And that's something you get from players that are $3,000 more expensive. So I'm so far through this slate loving the idea of balancing your lineup. And you could argue that Vucevic is like your highest priced player and you're totally fine with it.
Aaron Gordon too, 7,400. He's back to playing huge minutes. I talked about this earlier last week. Aaron Gordon's facilitating has skyrocketed since Markelle Fultz has
Yeah,
gone down
it
because
has.
they
I mean, he has a
don't
30%
have any
assist rate over the last
guards.
week. Like so this last week he's really, I don't know why. I've watched more Orlando Magic games on League Pass than almost any other team when the Bucks aren't on this year. I don't it just how the luck of the draw, I guess, but over the last week he's played way more aggressive. So I looked into it. Like he's got a 26% usage rate, 30% assist rate, 14% rebounding rate. He's averaging almost 1.2 fantasy points per minute over the last week. I mean, his price, like, it's really, really hard to argue.
He's point guard, small forward eligible on DraftKings.
That's the same as Ben Simmons.
Right.
Like, that's, I mean, you can't,
Let me ask you
I won't
this.
argue with his price. Aaron Gordon is point guard eligible. I
Aaron
never thought I'd
Gordon
say
is
that.
not, you would never project Aaron Gordon to have as many or more assists in a game than Ben Simmons. I'm not disputing that. But what's the
Correct.
difference in their usage right now? And their price tags are vastly different. And you know Gordon's taking on average like six or seven, maybe more shots per game
And
than
I
Ben
would
Simmons.
argue, with obviously we're talking about with Embiid in, but look at Gordon's last game, 18, 17, 9, and 2. I feel more confident that he can get there than Ben Simmons can with a triple double at his, given his track record. Like it
Right.
sounds
Gordon
crazy.
leads his team in assist rate the last week. He's rebounding at a fine clip. Plenty of upside at this price, especially against Minnesota. I just had Cole Anthony's been pretty bad other than the Brooklyn game. 5,300 is a fine price tag. You know he's going to play. The problem is he hasn't been playing like 30 plus minutes. Like
No,
even
and like
with
Steve Clifford even explicitly came out and said Cole Anthony is not ready for to step into full-time role. Like his
Right.
conditioning is horrible. He I can't it was before the I think it was what game did Trey or excuse me, Trey Burke, Markelle Fultz go down?
It was the
Was that before the new year?
Cleveland game. It was
It was
no, it was January 6th.
okay. It was the game after that. It was, because he saw 32 minutes of that Cleveland game. Steve Clifford came out and said, like, we are not going to give Cole Anthony all the run. He was absolutely gassed after 32 minutes last game. Like, that's a pretty big red flag. And you look at his last, like, he hasn't topped 32. He's topped 30 so, once.
Like, so I just... their starting point guard isn't playing more than like 31 minutes. Markelle Fultz is done for the year. Carter Williams is out again. Evan Fournier is expected to miss again. Point Aaron Gordon, 7,400. It's a thing.
Did you ever think you'd say that?
Not really. Like, I think I would say that more than I would say he's point guard eligible on DraftKings.
Yeah, that's
but they,
that's
they go hand in hand. I love Vucevic and Gordon now. My goodness, they and like if you want to play them, you know who to run it back with. It's D'Angelo Russell.
Yeah.
So really interesting game. All right, couple games left, and by a couple I mean four. So let's get through these. Phoenix at Houston, really interesting game when you look at the Rockets. John Wall going to be out again. Obviously, we saw Victor Oladipo smash in his Rockets debut. 32 points, seven turnovers, 9 assists, 5 rebounds, 2 steals. Just way more involvement in the offense than he's seen all year with the Pacers. So with John Wall out again, they don't really have any other ball handlers. Like Eric Gordon's more of an off-the-ball type player. Jayshon Tate's giving them some nice production as a ball handler. But this is going to be Victor Oladipo's team for the moment. 7,800. What do you think about him?
I like him. Me and Zach talked about him and how high we were on him a couple days ago, and I'm just as high on him for the exact same reason. Obviously, it's a one-game sample size with Houston, but in that game, 42% usage rate, 45% assist rate, 1.7. Yes, 42.1%. God. And he got off to a very, very slow start. Like he had like 6 fantasy points after the first like quarter and a half. 1.7 fantasy points per minute. Like, I believe when he was with Oklahoma City, we saw a bit more of like ball handling Oladipo. I think that's what we're seeing here, and we will as long as John Wall is out. So I think his price, again, if you're looking towards that balanced build, he makes complete sense. And I think even if you're going to roster a stud, he makes sense to kind of throw in there as your second highest spend up. For the same reasons I like Oladipo, I still don't mind Eric Gordon for his price. He's still only 5,500.
Yeah.
Had a bit of a down game last game, but I mean, still shot 17 times. And again, you want 30 fantasy points, go Eric Gordon. Like his peripherals are never going to be something you chase because he doesn't get many, but he's going to score and shoot the ball. So I think those two, especially from a per dollar standpoint, are my favorite options on Houston. Again, though, like you can't argue with Christian Wood. The guy is Chris Boucher with 35 plus minutes. That's literally what he is. But it's just the matchup with Phoenix, I'd rather take the savings and target Boucher or Jeremy Grant or an Aaron Gordon.
Or Nikola Vucevic, who's $200 more.
True.
But yeah, I mean, like they had that one instance a couple games ago where both Wood and Cousins were on the floor together, and then it just didn't happen again. So that's not something that they're suddenly planning on doing. So that obviously helps Wood's rebounding rate and his usage. Cousins is definitely somebody to keep an eye on in case his minutes start to ramp up, but I can't go to him right now. PJ Tucker's not awful at 4,100. The problem is, like, is Oladipo going to give him the same type of... I mean, he took 2 shots last game. It's, it's one of those plays, maybe if you're stuck, maybe he walks into some rebounds, but it's, he's not playing center anymore, so it's not going
to
be as...
I'd rather spend a bit more and get out to Jayshon Tate.
Yeah, it's fair. For Phoenix, I mean, Chris Paul's been in the $7,200 range all year, and he's going to give you 34 to 39 fantasy points. So he's a cash play for me, but the tournament upside really hasn't been there. The tournament upside hasn't been there for anybody on Phoenix for most of the year. I mean, Devin Booker has hit 50 fantasy points 0 times this year. DeAndre Ayton's really? Usage and involvement has not been has not been what we thought it was. He was much better last game against Memphis. 7K is kind of interesting for him against Houston, but Phoenix overall has been a pretty frustrating team. They've been great in real-life basketball, but fantasy, they've been a little bit tough to project.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think of all of them, I think Ayton and Chris Paul make the most sense given their price. I can't pay $8,200 for Devin Booker with his role this year, and that's no disrespect to him as a player. His facilitating just is not there anymore. He's averaging 4.3 assists this year. That's a far cry from what we saw last season, and it's obviously a direct result of the Chris Paul addition. I don't hate Cam Johnson at 3,900. He's going to see 20 plus minutes, shoots the ball a lot, and 3,900, he gets you 22 or more DraftKings points, and you're happy with it. And that's something totally in his range of outcomes. Mikal Bridges is also fine at 5,700. He's shown a lot more upside this year than I think I was expecting as really the fourth option on offense. I don't mind him, but I don't think you need to get there. I prefer a DeAndre Hunter. I prefer a Kevin Herter if they adjust his price. But again, Phoenix is a better real-life team than they are a fantasy team just because the distribution of usage is like asinine.
Yeah, it's like I said, they've been great from a real-life perspective, but fantasy, it's been a little bit tougher. Let's move on to the Spurs and the Golden State Warriors. 228.5 total. Warriors at home favored by 1.5. Andrew Wiggins is questionable for this game. Other than that, we are good to go in terms of injuries. I mean, Curry, same kind of situation as Joel Embiid, under 10K. Yep. Spurs have been playing a little bit faster this year. They've been bad against point guards. I'm probably going to have some exposure to Steph Curry in this game, especially, like you said, there aren't really those 10, 11K players that we have to have on the slate. We'll talk about Damian Lillard in a little bit, but this slate is loaded with plays in like the 8K to 10K, like 9,800 type range.
Yeah, I agree. And I think, again, Steph is never a bad target. And San Antonio over the last year, like not year and a half, but like this season and the back half of last season, they've really run at a faster pace than we're accustomed to with San Antonio over the last, you know, 4 or 5 years. So I think that does increase the appeal as well as the close spread. I don't, if Wiggins is out, that gives obviously a bump to Oubre. It would probably bump up Damian Lee, who would become a pretty interesting play at 3,400, seeing that he's already seeing close to 20 minutes a game. I'm still interested in James Wiseman at 4,600. I'm personally writing last game off, like he had five fouls like early in the third quarter. So he didn't see a minute in the game, I think, after the six-minute mark in the third around there. So I'm fine targeting him again at 4,600. The issue is, you know, we've talked about how many centers that we love already. Like, are you able to get there if you go double center? I don't know if I am, but I would not argue if you play Wiseman.
For whatever reason, by the way, James Wiseman's usage rate jumps up by 7% with Andrew Wiggins off the floor. He has a 32%.
I wonder if they just, you know, I wonder when
it's 47 minutes, so it's not the largest sample.
Yeah, but when Wiggins is on the floor, if the ball is not in Steph's hands, he's usually going ISO. So I wonder if those plays just transition to a bit more pick and roll with Wiseman being the roll man and just catching lobs. Like I saw when I was watching the Lakers Warriors game, I think it was like the first quarter. Draymond had a beautiful lob to Wiseman. The first thing I thought is I was like, oh, this is what Adam talked about all season long.
Yeah.
So he's I mean, Draymond's going to do wonders for this rookie, to put it simply.
And there was that clip of him coaching him after a play when they're at the foul line, which I loved. And
playing
I still like Draymond here.
Saying he's not a threat or whatever.
Yeah, I'm going to keep playing Draymond at this price tag. I know he's not going to, you know, win you a tournament. But, like, he almost triple-doubled last game. He's playing 32 minutes in close games. He's I'm probably going to keep playing him until he's, like, in the 6K range. And then I'll start 100%. To have trepidation. For the Spurs, they're kind of easy for me. I'm not playing LaMarcus Aldridge when DeMar DeRozan's active. He's just done nothing this year when he's been on the court. DeRozan's 8,500. The Spurs have been playing fast, but Golden State's playing as fast as anybody, so this is definitely a pace-up spot. His rebounding and assists have been great this year. He's actually quietly having a career year, or one of the best years of his career. Because remember in Toronto, he was a guy that really didn't offer the most production in peripherals, but that's changed with the Spurs.
They're playing at the four so much more, and that's really helped. Because they're throwing LaMarcus at the five, or when LaMarcus was out, play a ton of four, and that's really helped them.
Keldon Johnson's been really good for them, too. DeRozan and Keldon Johnson are my two favorite plays. A fast-paced game like this doesn't really hurt DeJounte Murray, who almost triple-doubled in his last game. I think those three Spurs players are pretty interesting.
I agree. I think they all warrant consideration in their own regard. Their upside's a bit different. I think of the three, my favorite is still LaMarcus Aldridge because he's, like, matchup aside, he's too cheap. 6,100 is far too cheap for him.
You can play LaMarcus Aldridge if you want and get two rebounds that he's gotten in each of his last three games.
I don't know if I'd go here on this slate just because of the abundance of power forwards and centers, but like, I mean, I don't know what happened to him. He only ended up playing 24 minutes last game. I don't know how the game scripted, but I think he had 20 fantasy points at half and just wasn't needed in the second half. But this game stays close. Like, he has 40, 45 DK point upside, especially with how much he's still being relied on to score. So I think at 6,100, that's a fine gamble to take in tournaments. Obviously, I'm with you. I'm not going to go here in like single entry, especially given the other options at the position, but I'm not going to argue against the one that does.
All right, two games left. Kings at the Los Angeles Clippers. Lou Williams is questionable for this game. Other than that, we're good off with injuries. I love Paul George and Kawhi in this game. If the Kings can keep this close, yep, they could both go crazy. Wrote about them the last time they played this team. The game got out of hand, but those two still performed pretty well. The Kings just can't guard skilled scorers and skilled players in isolation. They gave up the second most isolation points per game and over 9 per game. Kawhi Leonard's averaging 4.5 isolation possessions per game. Paul George isn't too far behind him. And you look at the DVP. I mean, I screenshotted it in my article. The Sacramento Kings ranked 30th against dimers, 30th against primary ball handlers, 30th against scorers, and 30th against crafty finishers. That's four of Kawhi's five archetypes, according to our advanced DVP. So, yeah, I think they could go a little bit overlooked because they are in a game where they're expected to win handily. But if they don't in the game, if Sacramento can keep this close, like, I think Paul George and Kawhi could both go for 50 plus.
I agree, and I also, given the matchup, I do think both of them are a touch cheap. Even Paul George at 9,100, like, he's played like the player that the Clippers envisioned when they brought him on last year. So I absolutely love both those calls, and I don't think they're going to be popular, especially given all the mid-range plays that we have touched on. Outside of those two, I just don't know if I can get anywhere else on LA. Like, Ibaka's minutes are a little volatile, and so is his production for 5,900. Lou Williams, you know, we've talked about it literally all the time on this podcast, how volatile and unreliable he's been, and he might not even play. So that would obviously open up some ball handling responsibility for Luke Kennard. I get it. I don't know if I'd go there. And then Marcus Morris is the only other one that I would potentially consider. Minutes typically range in the 20 to 25 minute range. And we saw his permanent upside last game. Like, if his shot's on, he's going to shoot the ball. If his shot's on, he can do damage. So I don't mind him if you absolutely need, you know, a value filler at the small forward position in this game. But if I'm looking to spend down in this game, I think I'd spend up for Kawhi and or Paul George, and then I'd find savings on the other side of the ball or the other side of the game with someone like Marvin Bagley, who I will let you talk about. I have a couple hours.
You talk about him.
Marvin Bagley.
I'm not.
You're just a big Marvin guy. That's what we've come to terms with. Marvin Bagley, Marvin Jones, and oddly enough, it's like a lineage. Like, it's Marvin Jones Jr., Marvin Bagley III. So curious what your takes on their fathers are, but we can save that for another conversation. But he's finally seen those 30-plus minutes, and he had a stretch where he was shooting the ball, like, really poorly. He had, like, a couple games where he shot under 25%. Within two or three games, and then the minutes weren't there. He dealt with nagging injuries, foul trouble, you name it. Like, it's just finally getting put together. Obviously not an ideal front court to attack in LA, but his price, I mean, to me, if I'm spending down at this position, his price is way too appealing to pass up.
What if Whiteside plays? Because he's missed the last two games. I know. That's helped Bagley get over 30 minutes. But
it has. But do you think – so my thing is, like, when Whiteside, before he went down, his minutes were really just that 12 to 15 yeah. range. Do you think Bagley's play in Whiteside's absence has given the Kings warrant to reduce that to 8 to 12 instead of, like, 12 to 15? Or just take minutes from other players as opposed to Bagley, who's – currently making the most of what Ronnie's getting.
Well, not to mention that Bielitsa hasn't been part of the rotation in like five games. That definitely doesn't hurt.
Correct. What if the one thing I didn't look at is what have Rashawn Holmes' minutes been like? He's still playing. He's playing huge minutes. I don't mind him for 6,400, but he lost that power forward eligibility.
Yeah, like I just don't know who I want to run it back with. Like if this game stays close, one of like Buddy Hield's going to get hot, or Fox is going to go off again, or Bagley's going to have another really good game. I don't know which one I feel most confident in. Like in a vacuum, would be De'Aaron Fox, obviously, but he's 8,900 on a slate.
I think
where,
Price Incorporated for me, it's Marvin Bagley.
Right, like it's on a slate where I want to play Damian Lillard, who's you know not exactly around him, but in that position. I want to play Curry. I want to play Trae Young. I want to play Russell, Brogdon. Like, I feel better. I feel better in terms of my lineup if I run it back with Buddy or Holmes or Bagley. But other than that, there's really nobody else on this team. I mean, Tyrese Halliburton's been really good for them, but his minutes have come back down as of late with the Kings, you know, getting a little bit healthier. You know, Harrison Barnes is kind of your guy, I guess, from this team. I just don't really ever go there, but yeah, I get it.
He's more of a FanDuel play than a DraftKings. His price is typically a few hundred dollars lower. Let me head over to FanDuel very quickly and see what it's at. And small forward is typically a wasteland on that site. Mm-hmm. So when you get a site that, let's see, Harrison Barnes, 5,800. I'm fine with 5,800 for Harrison Barnes, especially because they give you 3 points per steal, per block. He has the ability to rack up peripherals and stocks. I mean, against a similar defense in Indiana, he had 45 FanDuel points. So I don't mind it as like a small forward filler. Or you're forced to play two.
All right, let's close out this slate with the Memphis Grizzlies at the Portland Trail Blazers. Obviously, Portland will remain without CJ McCollum, as well as Yusuf Nurkic. And then Jonas Valanciunas with COVID-19 out for Wednesday's game and obviously games after that. For Memphis, we saw Brandon Clark remain in the starting lineup, but then Xavier Tillman, who's already playing around 17, 18 minutes per game in the rotation, he's gotten the start the last couple games, and he's been fairly productive. I mean, he played 29 minutes against Phoenix last game, 23 fantasy points, 3,500 for him. He probably is looking to be one of the best value plays of the slate. It stinks that he is. Oh, he's actually power forward eligible, so that's huge. He's power forward.
Yeah,
center.
Can fit him in a power forward or forward.
And
so
you can still play a Vucevic and that's huge. So thoughts on Memphis. We also saw John Morant, who we haven't talked about in the podcast in a while, come back against Philadelphia over the weekend, and then had another game against Phoenix where he was really good, 17 points, 10 assists. $7,300 is a really interesting price tag for John Morant.
Yeah, I mean, it's a price tag that I don't know if we'll see once he returns to form. So if you're in the boat where you prefer to kind of go and get ahead of the curve, in terms of players returning like this, I think this is a good spot to pounce on him because he is cheap. But again, for me, like the only Memphis player that I really want is Xavier Tillman, just because he opens up so much in terms of getting, you know, like I'm building as we go, just like a sample. And you throw Xavier Tillman and you can then get Chris Boucher, Nikola Vucevic, and Damian Lillard in your lineup and still have over $5,000 left for each spot, which is more than enough flexibility. So he opens up enough to get you.
Not enough to get Kevin Huerter.
Not correct. I mean, hey, if you throw Kevin Huerter in there, you're still sitting with $3,566 per player. Might be worth it.
I actually hope they don't adjust his price. I hope they leave it just for the shit, see how it happens.
Just to kill 1.8% of lineups at lock. But yeah, I mean, he opens up enough where I think he will be. I'd like to think he'd be the most popular value play on the slate, but I don't think casuals even really know who he is, so that might not be the case. So I absolutely love Xavier Tillman. I plan to have him. If I'm in my main lineup, if I'm running 10 lineups tomorrow, I'll probably have him in six.
Yeah, I like Morant still at 7,300. I think it's like a buy-low opportunity for him, and he's the guy that drives to the basket a ton, and you don't worry about that as much with Enes Kanter in the middle than you would if Nurkic was there. And they've been playing a lot more small ball because they haven't really had anybody. They haven't really been playing Harry Giles played 15 and 11 minutes last couple games, so he's getting a little bit of run, but You know, they're playing some Covington at the five, which definitely helps their, or doesn't help their rim protection. But yeah, it's really just Ja Morant and Tillman for me. Brooks is getting to the point where it's more comfortable to play him at 6K, but his minutes, like, they've been, I talked about this before with Dylan Brooks, they're running a lot of wings and a lot of players in rotation, so he hasn't played a lot of, like, 32-minute games. He's been in that 28-29 range a lot. Portland, we just keep playing Dame?
Yeah, I would keep playing Dame. I'd like to think Gary Trent bounces back a bit, but the fact that he didn't start last game, I mean, he shot 1-9, but the fact that he didn't start from McCollum kind of concerned me a bit. So I don't know if I can get there at 48. I don't hate Enes Kanter at his price. I mean,
I like him. Memphis is a terrible post-up defense.
Yeah,
so like
no,
bottom
they are.
Five
and
field goal
it's
percentage
not get any
and Joe Bell's out, right?
Out. Yeah. But the only issue, like, his price hasn't moved since the last light. The only issue is the abundance of options at center and him not having power forward eligibility. That it kind of, it's a hindrance to your lineup a bit. So I think Damian Lillard, if I'm spending up, he'd be my number one option. Don't mind Enes Kanter. Robert Covington seems to suck me in a lot more than I wish he would. I don't know if I can get there tonight. The only other player that I would have passing interest in is Rodney Hood at 3,800. He got the start for McCollum last game, 25 minutes, shot the lights out, had 28 fantasy points, 21 raw points. He has some peripheral upside. He doesn't flash it much, but he can walk into 4 or 5 rebounds and assists. And if he scores 21 points at 3,800, you don't need much. So that's another player that I wouldn't mind throwing in just to open up the rest of my lineup. But outside of that, it's a pretty cut and dry game.
Yeah, I mean, 10-4, some people may be like, oh, Dame wasn't, he didn't go for 65 last game, and now he's 10-4. Like, Dame still has as much upside for 70 fantasy points as anybody on the slate, especially with CJ McCollum out. So this slate's loaded, man. Like,
it is.
I have to start writing about this right after we get off the air here, and they're like, just the 9K range of plays that I've liked in on this slate, right? You know, Sabonis, Curry, Embiid. You know, Kevin Herter, joking, obviously. But, you know, Sabonis, Curry, Embiid, Kawhi, Trae Young, Paul George, D'Angelo Russell, Jaylen Brown, Vucevic, Bam, Christian Wood, Brogdon. It's a ton. It's a ton to like on this slate. You'll be doing the five stats article in case anybody missed it. Joe and I will be alternating the five stats. So when Joe does the game-by-game article, I'll be doing the five stats and vice versa. Check out all the live streams, Live with Fast Eddie Fear, NBA Primetime. You'll see guys like Javi, Kyle Murray, Eddie, Zach Weisenberg, like, you know, Tenacious D, everybody. And by the way, Tenacious D tweeted, David tweeted during our podcast, he said the same people that faded Jokic tonight are the same people that are going to be playing Kevin Herter on Wednesday night.
No lies detected. I mean, think about it. Why would you fade Nikola Jokic on a 2-game slate? Sorry, Javi. I'm pretty sure you did, but I apologize. But I don't get it.
Best of luck on this.
27-12-6 after the end of the third.
Yeah, he's ridiculous. He's the MVP of the league. I don't want to say by far, but I can't. Like, it's probably what him, Durant, Embiid. Durant's been that good, in my opinion. Luka's up there, obviously.
You know who? Luka's up there, but I would honestly probably top five voting. Domantas Sabonis might be in the top five.
I mean, you could make the case. Yeah, there's this could be.
They're winning basketball games.
This could be one of the tightest MVP races because players have changed teams, but like LeBron and Anthony Davis aren't doing as much heavy lifting this year, so they might not be like clear cut candidates. Durant's back. Luka's still playing great. Curry can make a run. We know that. It's going to be interesting. It's going to be really fun. I'm just glad to have basketball in my life. Check out all the content at FTN Daily per usual. We'll be in Discord, all that great stuff to help you get ready for this slate. Best of luck. Have a good Wednesday. We'll be back on Thursday. See you later.
Thank you for tuning in to today's episode of the FTN NBA Podcast with Adam and Joe. Please subscribe, rate, and review the podcast.